King Cove, KFPS, False Pass.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
Yeah, I understand that. That's why I'm trying to figure out how you can come to the conclusion right now that diversity had something to do with this crash.
Because I have common sense, okay?
Without any evidence, President Trump blames the deadly Washington, D.C. plane crash on diversity. We'll speak to aircraft dispatcher Bill McGee on the big lie of aviation DEI. Then to Capitol Hill for three high-profile confirmation hearings of Trump's cabinet members.
Before I conclude, I want to make sure this committee is clear about a few things. News reports and many in the hearing yesterday have claimed that I'm anti-vaccine and anti-industry. Well, I'm neither.
As Trump's pick for health secretary, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., insists he's not anti-vax, we'll go to Samoa, where experts blame his campaign against vaccines for a deadly measles outbreak in 2019 that killed over 80 people, many of them children. Then to the confirmation hearings for Kash Patel, Trump's pick to head the FBI.
Have you referred to the media as the most powerful enemy of the United States that they have ever seen?
And to the confirmation hearing for Director of National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, who repeatedly refused to call whistleblower Edward Snowden a traitor. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The National Transportation Safety Board has confirmed all 64 people aboard American Airlines Flight 5432 were killed Wednesday evening when the passenger jet collided with a U.S. military helicopter and crashed into the Potomac River as it made its final approach to Reagan National Airport outside Washington, D.C. All three people aboard the Black Hawk helicopter were killed as well. Investigators say the helicopter was on a training mission, had veered off its pre-approved flight path shortly before the disaster. The Washington Post reports the air traffic control tower was understaffed ahead of the crash, with two air traffic controllers doing double duty Wednesday night. One day earlier, another jet had to abort its first landing attempt after a helicopter approached its flight path. During a news conference Thursday, President Trump admitted the cause of the crash is still unknown, but still place the blame on DEI.
The initiative is part of the FAA's diversity and inclusion hiring plan, which says diversity is integral to achieving FAA's mission of ensuring safe and efficient travel. I don't think so. I think it's just the opposite.
In a fact check of Trump's comments, the Washington Post found the FAA launched a program to hire air traffic controllers with the very disabilities that Trump attacked in 2019 during Trump's first term. We'll have the latest on the crash after headlines. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. faced a second day of Senate confirmation hearings for Health Secretary Thursday, refusing to disavow the debunked link between vaccines and autism. Kennedy also gave incorrect information about Medicare and Medicaid and refused to acknowledge COVID-19 vaccines are life-saving. Here he's questioned by Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders.
Was the vaccine, COVID vaccine, successful in saving millions of lives?
I don't know. We don't have a good surveillance system, unfortunately.
We don't know?
I don't think anybody can say that.
We'll go to Samoa to speak to the health director, where there was a measles outbreak after a trip Robert F. Kennedy took to Samoa, where he had talked about the dangers of vaccines. We'll speak with the health director in Samoa. Meanwhile, Trump's pick to head the FBI, Kash Patel, refused to explicitly say whether he would target Trump's critics during his hearing, downplayed his own history of embracing conspiracy theories, and refused to acknowledge Trump lost the 2020 election.
You understand what I'm asking you. Can you say the words, Joe Biden won the 2020 election?
Joe Biden is was the president of the United States.
Kash Patel's hearing came amidst reports that top officials at the FBI have been told to retire or be imminently fired. Tulsi Gabbard, Trump's nominee for director of national intelligence, also faced questions from senators Thursday who grilled the former Hawaii congresswoman about Edward Snowden, her 2017 meeting with Syria's then leader Bashar al-Assad, and past comments blaming NATO for Russia's war on Ukraine. We'll have more on all these hearings later in the broadcast. CBS's parent company, Paramount Global, is in settlement talks with Trump's legal team, who's suing the network for $10 billion under the Texas Deceptive Trade Practices Act. Trump's lawsuit accuses CBS of deceptively editing a 60 Minutes interview with Vice President Kamala Harris last year. The New York Times reports controlling shareholder Shari Redstone is pushing for a deal with Trump, and Paramount executives reportedly believe settling the lawsuit would increase their odds of securing a planned $8 billion merger with Skydance Media. Meanwhile, the social media giant Meta has agreed to pay $25 million to settle a lawsuit brought by President Trump after Facebook and Instagram suspended Trump's accounts following the January 6, 2021 attack on the Capitol. Most of the funds will be directed toward Trump's future presidential library, they say. Newly appointed Federal Communications Commission Chair Brendan Carr has ordered an investigation into NPR and PBS stations as the Trump administration seeks to cut off funding to public broadcasters. Carr says he's focused on whether underwriting announcements from corporate sponsors cross the line into prohibited advertisements, but the attack comes after Trump advisor Elon Musk proposed ending Congress's $535 million annual allocation to the corporation for public broadcasting. A federal judge has lifted travel restrictions on Stuart Rhodes, the founder of the far-right Oath Keepers militia group, after President Trump commuted his 18-year prison sentence as part of a mass pardon for 1,500 January 6th rioters. Rhodes will no longer be barred from entering Washington, D.C. or the U.S. Capitol grounds. In 2022, a federal jury found Rhodes guilty of seditious conspiracy after prosecutors showed he played a key role in planning the January 6th insurrection. Meanwhile, the Trump administration has removed a security detail protecting retired General Mark Milley, who served as chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff during President Trump's first term. After the Capitol insurrection, General Milley became one of Trump's most prominent critics, describing him as fascist to the core and, quote, the most dangerous person to this country, unquote. President Trump's issued two executive orders targeting K through 12 education, including one that would block federal funding for schools that protect transgender students and teach critical race theory. The order also promotes so-called patriotic education. A separate executive order directs the Education Department and several other government agencies to redirect taxpayer funds from public education to private school vouchers. More than 100 Palestinians, including over two dozen children, were freed by Israel Thursday as part of the Gaza ceasefire deal. Massive crowds gathered in Ramallah in the occupied West Bank to celebrate and welcome prisoners returning home.
We are part of these people who tell the world we do not leave our prisoners inside the prison. Our message is national unity. This people deserves national unity.
One of those released was the prominent Palestinian resistance leader Zakaria Zubeidi, who in 2021 notably broke out of an Israeli maximum security prison through a tunnel with five others. They were recaptured days later. In 2006, he co-founded the world-famous Freedom Theater in the Jenin refugee camp where Zubeidi was born. Meanwhile, the UN is calling for 2,500 Palestinian children to be immediately evacuated from Gaza to receive urgent medical treatment as they could die in the coming weeks. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, M23 fighters say they'll march on the city of Bukavu after the Rwanda-backed group seized control of the eastern city of Goma. The head of the Congo River Alliance, a coalition of armed groups that includes M23, has vowed to topple President Felix Tshisekedi's government. The DRC has criticized international actors for failing to intervene in the mounting conflict and called for young people to mobilize in support of its military. On Thursday, protesters in Bukavu gathered to support the mobilization.
We will use all the means at our disposal, all the resources we have, to end this war. It will be long, but we will win, rain or shine. I believe the enemy, Rwanda and its allies, will be too small for their big shoes because we are starting now, right now. We are starting the mobilization.
Uganda's confirmed its first Ebola outbreak in 2 years, reporting the death of a nurse in Kampala. Authorities are tracing the nurse's contacts as they rush to curb the spread of the highly infectious disease. The last Ebola outbreak to hit Uganda in 2022 and 23 killed at least 55 people. Separately, a potential Ebola outbreak has been reported in the western part of the Democratic Republic of the Congo. In Germany, massive crowds of demonstrators took to the streets to protest against two mainstream conservative parties, Christian Democratic Union, or CDU, and Christian Social Union, or CSU, cooperating with the far-right AfD, Alternative for Germany, to pass an anti-immigrant measure. The non-binding motion would allow authorities to reject asylum seekers at the German border and facilitate deportations. In a rare move, the former German Chancellor, Angela Merkel, condemned her successor as head of the CDU, Friedrich Merz, for collaborating with the extreme right. This is a protester speaking from Dresden Thursday.
I find that simply inconceivable because, yes, for the first time since 1932, no, 1945, this is the first time that a fascist party or a party with very strong fascist tendencies, I don't want to belittle that at all, exercise power here, and that must not be allowed to happen in Germany.
Germans will head to the polls for a federal election February 23rd. In Ukraine, at least 9 people were killed, 13 others wounded, when a Russian drone struck a residential block in the eastern city of Sumy earlier today. The bombing came after Russian forces seized another town in eastern Ukraine, bringing Russia closer to its goal of seizing the entire Donbas region. Last week, Ukraine's commander-in-chief admitted to a desertion crisis, with troops increasingly abandoning their positions on the front lines. In Syria, Ahmed al-Shara has been named as interim president to lead the transition. He's head of Hayat Tahrir al-Shams, or HTS, which led the rebel coalition that toppled Bashar al-Assad. On Thursday, Shara vowed to unite Syrians.
We will work on forming an inclusive transitional government that reflects Syria's men, women, and youth, and take charge to rebuild new Syria institutions.
Shara says he will establish a temporary legislative council to govern Syria until a new constitution is adopted and elections can be held, a process he said could take 4 years. The European Union announced this week it will begin easing sanctions against Syria as the country rebuilds after nearly 14 years of war. President Trump vowed Thursday to impose his 25% tariff on goods from Canada and Mexico starting tomorrow, February 1st, though he added that oil may be excluded. The move is expected to further increase the cost of consumer goods, including groceries, and disrupt key industries such as auto manufacturing and energy. A group of Quaker congregations have filed suit against the Trump administration following its order allowing federal agents to raid what's considered protected areas, including schools, hospitals, shelters, and places of worship. The lawsuit argues, quote, the very threat of that enforcement deters congregants from attending services, especially members of immigrant communities, unquote, adding Trump's order thus denies guarantee of religious liberty. And the Democratic National Committee is gathering Saturday to elect a new chair. Fay Shaker, who is Bernie Sanders' 2020 presidential campaign manager, only entered the race 2 weeks ago, but is seen as the most progressive choice, vowing to push Democrats to become the party of the working class. Ken Martin, chair of the Minnesota Democratic Farmer Labor Party, and Ben Wickler, chair of the Wisconsin Democratic Party, have been campaigning for 2 months and are seen as favorites to win the DNC chairmanship. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. During a White House press briefing Thursday, President Trump said the cause of Wednesday's midair collision of a U.S. military helicopter with an American passenger jet at Reagan National Airport outside Washington, D.C., that killed 67 people is still unknown. But Trump proceeded to blame, without evidence, Democrats and federal workplace DEI initiatives for the deadliest U.S. aviation disaster in more than two decades.
My administration will set the highest possible bar for aviation safety. We have to have our smartest people. It doesn't matter what they look like, how they speak, who they are. It matters intellect, talent, the word talent. They have to be talented, naturally talented geniuses. You can't have regular people doing that job. They won't be able to do it. But we'll restore faith in American air travel. I'll have more to say about that. I do want to point out that various articles that appeared prior to my entering office, and here's one. The FAA's diversity push includes focus on hiring people with severe intellectual and psychiatric disabilities. That is amazing. And then it says FAA says people with severe disabilities are most underrepresented segment of the workforce, and they want them in, and they want them. They can be air traffic controllers. I don't think so. This was in January 14th, so that was a week before I entered office. They put a big push to put diversity into the FAA's program.
Trump was reading from a year-old online report about efforts at the FAA to hire people with disabilities. During the news conference, journalists repeatedly questioned Trump about his unfounded assertions. This is one exchange with New York Times reporter David Sanger.
Mr. President, you have today blamed the diversity elements, but then told us that you weren't sure that the controllers made any mistake. You then said perhaps the helicopter pilots were the ones who made the mistake.
It's all under investigation.
I understand that. That's why I'm trying to figure out how you can come to the conclusion right now that diversity had something to do with this crash.
Because I have common sense, okay?
During Thursday's news conference, Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth echoed Donald Trump's attacks on diversity.
We will have the best and brightest in every position possible. As you said in your inaugural, it is colorblind and merit-based. The best leaders possible, whether it's flying Blackhawks and flying airplanes, leading platoons, or in government. The era of DEI is gone at the Defense Department. And we need the best and brightest, whether it's in our air traffic control, or whether it's in our generals, or whether it's throughout government.
During Thursday's press conference, Vice President J.D. Vance echoed Trump's attacks on DEI.
When you don't have the best standards in who you're hiring, it means, on the one hand, you're not getting the best people in government, but on the other hand, it puts stresses on the people who are already there. And I think that is a core part of what President Trump is going to bring and has already brought to Washington, D.C., is we want to hire the best people because we want the best people at air traffic control, and we want to make sure we have enough people at air traffic control who are actually competent to do the job. If you go back to just some of the headlines over the past 10 years, you have many hundreds of people suing the government because they would like to be air traffic controllers, but they were turned away because of the color of their skin. That policy ends under Donald Trump's leadership because safety is the first priority of our aviation industry.
For more, we're joined by Bill McGee, Senior Fellow for Aviation and Travel at American Economic Liberties Project. As an FAA-licensed aircraft dispatcher, he spent 7 years in airline flight operations management and is the author of Attention All Passengers, The Airline's Dangerous Descent and How to Reclaim Our Skies. He teaches at Vaughan College of Aeronautics. Bill McGee's new piece for Frommers is headlined The Big Lie of Aviation DEI. Now, I want to point out, Bill, that you wrote this piece not in response to the news conference at the White House, but before the White House news conference and before the crash. Can you talk about what's going on here? President Trump, when asked about any other issue, said, well, the investigation has to continue. But he still blamed the crash on DEI.
Yes, you're right. The fact is that these rumors, which are unfounded, have been swirling around aviation for more than 20 years. But they are not based in fact. That's why I wrote what I wrote in Frommers the other day. That was, again, as you pointed out, you know, the day before the crash. But it's not as if what we heard this week, we haven't heard before. And it's simply unfounded. As you just pointed out, these rumors are not at all based in fact. what the DEI initiatives at the FAA and at other agencies as well, but specifically at the FAA, what they were meant to do was to broaden the pool of recruitment for positions. But this needs to be said in all caps and bold. The fact is, there has not been a loosening of standards. The same standards have to apply in terms of testing. You know, when I was licensed as an FAA dispatcher, we had a written test, we had an oral test, we had an 8-hour practical exam. All of those things are still in place. No one is going into safety critical jobs without being prepared.
Bill McGee, Trump blamed Biden. He blamed Obama. He blamed Pete Buttigieg, the former transportation secretary. He said they actually came out with a directive too white. And we want the people that are competent, he said. And they kept talking about the best and the brightest, not to be confused with the best and the whitest. If you can comment on this and the history of this, where his certainty comes from. He says it's just common sense, yet presented absolutely no evidence.
Well, I think we need to step back a moment and look at the bigger picture with what is really going on here. We have an aviation industry in crisis, and we've had that for several years now at the FAA, at Boeing, at the airlines. And for every minute that we spend talking about DEI, we're not talking about so many other critical issues. FAA safety inspectors, they have been understaffed for 40 years. It's not just a matter of throwing money at these problems, but the FAA needs to be realigned. Since the Reagan administration, it has not kept pace with the industry. And, you know, we can go through a long list of problems that are not being addressed by this. And every time I hear this, yeah, that's why I wrote the column I wrote, the DEI issue, in my view, it's a distraction. I mean, for those that are serious about aviation safety, they know we have a long laundry list of problems that need to be addressed with air traffic control, with maintenance outsourcing, with the oversight of the airlines, the oversight of Boeing. And instead, we're talking about a nonsensical issue that is not based in fact.
After Donald Trump's inauguration, the White House issued an executive order titled Keeping Americans Safe in Aviation that rescinds all diversity, equity, and inclusion hiring programs at the FAA. I want to turn to Rick Larson, ranking member of the House Committee on Transportation Infrastructure, criticizing the executive order in a statement saying, quote, hiring air traffic controllers is the number one safety issue, according to the entire aviation industry, instead of working to improve aviation safety and lower costs for hardworking American families, the administration's choosing to spread bogus DEI claims to justify this decision. And you have, Bill, the New York Times reporting and others that it looks like the Black Hawk helicopter with the three, and usually it's supposed to be four people, soldiers inside, being off the actual route and too high.
Yeah, you're right. And I think, you know, Representative Larson is correct as well. We have had an air traffic controller shortage in this country for several years now. These issues cross political lines, by the way. They go back years and years. And the pipeline, it actually improved under Secretary Buttigieg and President Biden. We started seeing more air traffic controllers come online. But we do not have enough. And when you look at what happened the other night in the Potomac River, I know that airport very, very well, DCA, because when I was working in airline flight operations, I worked for the Northeast Shuttle. So I dealt with DCA dispatching flights there every day of the week. And I can tell you, it's one of the most challenging airports in the country. And we need the absolute full staffing of air traffic control at DCA and at airports all across the country. We're not there. The irony here is that for all the knock on DEI, it's about doing that. It's about broadening the net of trying to attract more people into aviation, people that traditionally were not drawn to aviation. You mentioned I teach at Vaughan College of Aeronautics. It happens to be the most diverse student body of any country, college in the country. And I see it all the time. We're sending more and more people into aviation who wouldn't before. So, you know, we need to get rid of the rumors that are unfounded about the safety question. And we need to start doing things to improve the system, including staffing at the FAA on the air traffic control side and staffing at the FAA on the safety inspector side. We all know that Boeing is a mess. This was once probably the greatest corporation in this country. And why is it a mess? Well, in large measure, it's because the FAA hasn't been able to inspect it. They have something called a designee system that allows Boeing employees to be the eyes and ears of the FAA. Imagine that. Imagine having to tell your boss that you need to shut down the assembly line. You're a mid-level manager and your mortgage is riding on this. It's a system that really needs to be revamped from top to bottom.
So the crash comes as the Federal Aviation Administration is lacking an administrator, though Trump just named one. But it was lacking an FAA administrator after Elon Musk pressured Mike Whitaker to announce his early resignation in December. Musk was furious with Whitaker after the FAA fined Musk's SpaceX over $600,000 for safety violations on Florida's Gulf Coast. Musk has also accused the FAA of slowing development of its experimental Starship rocket. Earlier this month, the FAA grounded Starship after a test vehicle caught fire, veered off course, and exploded high above the Caribbean, the disaster triggering massive sonic booms as fiery debris re-entered the atmosphere at hypersonic speeds, littering the Turks and Caicos with rocket parts and forcing airlines to divert dozens of flights. So the richest man in the world forces the head of the FAA out. And now, just after the crash, Trump names a new FAA administrator, Christopher Rocciolo, a 22-year veteran of the agency. Can you respond to Musk and what you know about the new FAA head?
Yeah, you raise a great question, you know, because about 15 years ago, the FAA Reauthorization Act in Congress specifically changed the parameters so that the FAA administrator term would be 5 years. And the clear intent there was that that aviation safety is so critical that it should rise above politics, and that a five-year term would guarantee that an administrator would be in office during any kind of a presidential transition from one party to another, from one president to another. Well, we didn't see that happen, right? Michael Whitaker was in office only for a little more than a year. He should have been in office for 5 years, and he was removed on inauguration day. As you say, all of the media reports indicate this was because of Musk and because of Whitaker coming down on his company. This is not how the system is supposed to work. Aviation safety should be above politics. And unfortunately, for decades now, we have seen not administrators, but acting administrators. That's what we have seen in the first Trump administration. You know, you'll recall the two fatal Boeing 737 MAX accidents. It wasn't until after the second accident in early 2019 that it was as if the administration woke up and said, oh, we don't have an FAA administrator. Now, I know there are those that are going to say an acting administrator is almost as good as an administrator. It's not the case. Yes, they can run the day-to-day and they can deal with crises and they can, you know, put out whatever fires, you know, are burning that day. But they do not have the ability to look at long-term issues, including staffing. And so we have to start treating this more seriously. And a permanent FAA administrator needs to be in place at all times.
So you have right now, yeah, he may be the richest man in the world, not to be glib, but the guy who keeps blowing up rockets is now influencing airline safety policy.
Yeah, it's a very dangerous situation. There's no two ways about it. Again, you know, the FAA used to be called the gold standard for a government agency overseeing aviation. Other nations, when they had problems, when they had accidents that weren't even in any way related to the United States, not involving a U.S.-built aircraft, not involving a U.S. airline, they would turn to the FAA and the NTSB and ask for assistance. We are no longer the gold standard. It's just that simple. We have seen it in recent years when other countries have said, no, we'll do without the FAA on this investigation, particularly after the Boeing MAX crashes. This is not how to run the FAA, to have someone like Elon Musk come in and make these decisions.
Bill McGee, I want to thank you for being with us, Senior Fellow for Aviation and Travel at American Economic Liberties Project, an FAA-licensed aircraft dispatcher. We're going to link to your new piece for Frommer's, titled, for Frommer's, The Big Lie of Aviation DEI. Bill McGee was Editor-in-Chief of Consumer Reports Travel Letter. He is the author of Attention All Passengers. Coming up next, Samoa, where experts blame RFK Jr.'s campaign against vaccines for a deadly measles outbreak in 2019. Back in 20 seconds. Broken English by Marianne Faithfull, the British singer, actress, pop icon, died Thursday at the age of 78. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. We turn now to several confirmation hearings on Capitol Hill for President Trump's cabinet members, beginning with Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who faced a second day of hearings for Health Secretary. Kennedy has previously campaigned as pro-choice, but during the hearing, he repeatedly said he believes, quote, every abortion is a tragedy and vowed to implement Trump's policies. He also gave incorrect information about Medicare and Medicaid. Kennedy's long record of vaccine skepticism was a major focus. He repeatedly refused to disavow the debunked link between vaccines and autism and refused to acknowledge COVID vaccines are life-saving. But he ended with this claim.
Before I conclude, I want to make sure this committee is clear about a few things. News reports and many in the hearing yesterday have claimed that I'm anti-vaccine and anti-industry. Well, I'm neither. I'm pro-safety. I'm pro-good science. I worked for 40 years to raise awareness about mercury and other toxics in fish, and nobody called me anti-fish. All my kids are vaccinated. I believe vaccines have saved millions of lives and play a critical role in healthcare.
In the same hearing on Thursday, Kennedy defended his trip to Samoa in June of 2019, 4 months before a measles outbreak was declared that killed 83 people, mostly children. Kennedy's anti-vaccine nonprofit, Children's Health Defense, offered to finance the trip. This is Democratic Senator Ed Markey of Massachusetts questioning Kennedy about that trip.
So let me just follow through now, 2019. So now in October of 2019, the CDC declared a measles outbreak in Samoa. And in November, Samoa started a mass vaccination campaign to stop the outbreak. That same month, November of 2019, after 16 people had already died from the outbreak and Samoa was trying to respond to the crisis, you sent a letter to the Prime Minister of Samoa stating that, quote, it is a regrettable possibility that these children are causalities of the vaccine. By unanimous consent, I will introduce that letter into the record.
Without objection.
So as Samoa was trying to contain the outbreak, you were saying that it was the fault of the vaccine rather than the absence of vaccinations that caused the outbreak in Samoa in the same year you visited Samoa.
And I replied to that, Senator.
Let me just finish. The death count in Samoa grew to 83. And ultimately, volunteers in New Zealand sent tiny coffins to help bury the dozens of children who died. And the Samoan Director General of Health later said, with his last name and the status attached to it, people will believe him. People will believe Robert Kennedy.
So that was Senator Markey. This week, Samoa's prime minister criticized RFK Jr.'s vaccine views and said she's surprised by his nomination for health secretary. For more, we're joined by two guests. But we're going to begin in Apia, the capital of Samoa. We'll begin with Ioni Dr. Alec Ekodoma, who is the current Director General of Health for Samoa's Health Ministry. Doctor, welcome to Democracy Now! Thanks for joining us from Samoa. Can you explain, for 2 days we've heard about Samoa, explain exactly what happened in 2019?
Thank you very much for the opportunity. In 2019, Samoa had a very low vaccination rate, and that was because of some problems back in 2018 with the mixing of vaccines that resulted in two deaths. And so therefore we had a low vaccination rate already. And Kennedy visited before the measles outbreak. Now, the measles outbreak, of course, it came from New Zealand across the islands, and because of a low vaccination rate, it just took off. And so resulting in so many deaths. But the government responded quickly and mounted a vaccination campaign. And there was an international assistance to Samoa from all countries in the world who came across, doctors and nurses came across to Samoa to help with the mass vaccination of our people. So that drove the vaccination rate up to 90% within a few months. So Kennedy's presence in Samoa a few months before that actually emboldened the anti-vaxxers locally and also from New Zealand. And so they were the ones really that tried to sow the vaccine hesitancy in the country. But fortunately, our leaders did not believe that and mounted this emergency and mass vaccination campaign.
Why did Kennedy go to Samoa?
Apparently, he came to talk about some database that they could create. But when he was here, he talked to the then Director General of Health and to the Prime Minister, but he also talked to local anti-vaxxers as well. I'm not privy to what was discussed. But the result of his visit didn't result in any improvements in our ICT or software capabilities in the country. None was promised.
I want to bring our other guest into this conversation. As we talk to the health director in Samoa, I also want to bring Brian Deer in, who was there in 2019, in the midst of the measles outbreak. He's an investigative journalist and author of The Doctor Who Fooled the World, his recent New York Times opinion piece, I'll Never Forget What Kennedy Did During Samoa's Measles Outbreak. So can you elaborate further on what Dr. Ekodoma is saying?
Good morning, Amy. Yes, indeed. I was out in Samoa at the time, and I spent a great deal of my time there speaking to the mothers of children who died from measles. And it was a most emotional experience. And I ended my time there just crying as I became overcome by the pain of these mothers. 83 people died, overwhelmingly small children. Now, Mr. Kennedy thinks he knows better than anybody else. He claims that he's not anti-vaccine. I've been following what is now called the anti-vaccine movement for 25 years, and I can assure you that Mr. Kennedy is not only an anti-vaccine campaigner, he is the preeminent anti-vaccine campaigner in the world. And he went to Samoa, and after the outbreak began, he then wrote to the Prime Minister trying to suggest that it wasn't in fact a virus at all that was killing these children, but was in fact the responsibility of the vaccine itself. And he didn't stop there. Even this week, speaking to senators, he claimed that nobody knows what these children died from, even though the measles the vaccine there had collapsed as a result of other issues. And then after a vaccination campaign that followed the outbreak or occurred at the same time as the outbreak, the children stopped dying. But Mr. Kennedy felt that he should tell senators that nobody knows what killed those children. Extraordinary thing for him to say.
What do you think, Brian Deer? And then I want to ask the health minister in Samoa of him being the health secretary, the Secretary of Health and Human Services of the United States?
Well, I have to say, listening to him over the last couple of days, Amy, that I was shocked by the attitude he displayed. He was making it absolutely clear that notwithstanding him being the hoping to become the head of an agency with a $2,000 billion budget and employing 90,000 people, he was going to personally involve himself in vaccine science. And it would be he who would be deciding whether the research was conducted properly, even though he has no medical or scientific qualifications at all, and not the enormous staff he represents and the agencies that have actually written to him previously, telling him that the research overwhelmingly and conclusively shows that there is no link between vaccines and, for example, autism. He was making it absolutely clear to senators that he was going to, in that job, with those enormous responsibilities for that massive entity, he was going to involve himself in the individual pieces of research and deciding for himself whether vaccines, for example, cause autism.
And before we leave Samoa, Dr. Alec Ekeroma, if you can talk about the significance of if he is confirmed as health secretary here in the U.S.
It is quite significant. Someone who is prominent in the world with a loud hailer, spitting out anti-vaccine sentiments, emboldening anti-vaxxers around the world and in Samoa, is going to be a public health disaster for us. Already, we're going to have reduction in U.S. funding to United Nations and to WHO. That is going to affect our capability here. And then you add in propaganda into this role, that is going to slow down the flow of vaccines to us, that is going to harm our public health state in this country. And so therefore, it will be a disaster for us.
Well, I want to thank you, Dr. Alec Ekeroma, for joining us, Director General of Health for Samoa's Health Ministry. Brian Deer, I want to move on to another issue. You wrote the book, The Doctor Who Fooled the World. I want to go right now to another interaction in the Senate, another exchange. This is Independent Senator Bernie Sanders questioning RFK Jr. Thursday alongside Senator Bill Cassidy, physician and key Republican vote.
I find myself in the unusual and uncomfortable position of having to agree with Senator Cassidy's line of questioning. Mr. Kennedy, in an interview in July 2023, you stated, quote, "I do believe autism does come from vaccines," and you have, the end of quote, and you have praised a gentleman named Andrew Wakefield for his research. What studies, you talk about the need to be science-based, to get our information, good information to make decisions. What studies have you utilized to come to the conclusion that vaccines cause autism?
I'm happy to sit down with you.
No, no, please, just answer me that.
Look at the Mawson study, Senator.
The what? Yeah.
Just look at that study.
Yeah, I will. And that was published.
But I wouldn't rest on a single study.
Right.
And all studies can be better.
Okay. Don't mean to be rude. I don't have a lot of time.
Just saying
would not be. I just heard you say you could not be happier if you were proved wrong. Mr. Chairman, I asked to put into the record 16 studies done by scientists and doctors all over the world saying that vaccines do not cause autism.
So in the last few minutes we have, Brian Deer, you wrote the book, The Doctor Who Fooled the World. You were talking about Dr. Andrew Wakefield. If you can comment on what's the connection between Robert Kennedy and Dr. Andrew Wakefield, known as the father of the anti-vaccine movement.
Well, they basically run this movement together. Kennedy, Andrew Wakefield, and another man, Del Bigtree, who works with them both, are, if you like, the innermost circle of this movement, which has evolved in recent years. Andrew Wakefield is a research cheat. He was responsible for a fraudulent study published in London in 1998 that was referred to by another senator yesterday, Maggie Hassan of New Hampshire. And she broke down as she was trying to explain that she has a developmentally challenged son and that she had blamed herself or had agonized over whether she should blame herself for having vaccinated her son and whether it was something she had done that caused his disability. And she was breaking down there even during the hearing as she was trying to get her words out. The suffering that parents have been exposed to as a result of this man, Andrew Wakefield in particular, and his research paper that she was referring to and Bernie Sanders was referring to, published in London in 1998. And I would say was the honour of my life to have caused to be retracted and exposed for what it was.
Brian Deer, I want to thank you for being with us. Investigative journalist, author of The Doctor Who Fooled the World. We'll link to your New York Times op-ed. I'll never forget what Kennedy did during Samoa's measles outbreak. Next up, the confirmation hearings of Tulsi Gabbard and Kash Patel. Back in 20 seconds. Burden of Truth by Craig Armstrong. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. We turn now to two other confirmation hearings that took place Thursday for roles overseeing American intelligence and law enforcement. Director of National Intelligence pick Tulsi Gabbard faced bipartisan skepticism, while Trump's pick to head the FBI, Kash Patel, appeared to have the support he needs despite vocal opposition from the Democrats. Kash Patel testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee, downplaying his past promotion of right-wing conspiracy theories and said only 40% of Americans have faith in the FBI. While Republicans hailed him as a reformer, Democrats grilled Patel over his past comments calling for a so-called enemies list and praising the January 6th rioters. This is Democratic Senator Dick Durbin, ranking member of the Senate Judiciary Committee.
Mr. Patel posted on social media, quote, January 6th, never an insurrection. Cowards in uniform exposed. End of quote. Let me repeat that. Cowards in uniform exposed. Who was in the Capitol building on January 6th in a uniform? The Capitol Police were. Do you think they were cowards? Many of them risked their lives and some gave their lives in defense of this building. How about the DC police who were here as well? They were in uniform. Cowards risking their lives as well. Some of them being battered and beaten by these mobsters that came on into the Capitol. And Mr. Patel claims that the FBI agency he aspires to lead, get this now, was planning January 6th for a year. He says the FBI was planning January 6th for a year. That's a quote. Mr. Patel has gone so far as to co-produce and sell musical recordings of a song performed by January 6th rioters in jail.
Democrats also focused on Kash Patel's record of going after journalists and calling for retribution against people he believes are trying to undermine President Trump. This is Democratic Senator Sheldon Whitehouse of Rhode Island questioning Patel.
Here's what this nominee himself has said about using his office to prosecute journalists. We will go out and find the conspirators, not just in government, but in the media. We're going to come after you, whether it's criminally or civilly. Is that a correct quotation, Mr. Patel?
Senator, that's a partial quotation.
But it's correct.
In part.
Regarding his publication of his enemies list, Mr. Patel proclaimed, "The manhunt starts tomorrow." and reposted a video depicting him taking a chainsaw to his political enemies. Is that you, Kash Patel, retruthed, reposting that at the top of that page?
Senator, I had nothing to do with the creation of that meme.
Is that you reposting it was my question.
And that's me at the top.
You said FBI agents were responsible for the violence on January 6th, and I quote you here, beyond a reasonable doubt. Is that what you said?
That's completely incorrect, and I appreciate the opportunity to address that.
I'll give you an opportunity in writing, but this is my time now.
Have at it.
An Inspector Attorney General investigation found that that was false. And you said we should impeach judges who rule against Donald Trump, who are, in your words, political terrorists.
So that was Senator Whitehouse questioning Kash Patel. This is Democratic Senator Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota.
Have you referred to the media as the most powerful enemy of the United States that they have ever seen? Is that right?
Again, you're reading a quote. I take that you're reading an accurate.
CPAC 223-24. You said we're going to come after the people in the media who lied about American citizens who helped Joe Biden rig the elections. We're going to come after you, whether it's criminally or civilly. Is that something you said?
That's a partial statement of what I said.
Steve Bannon's podcast. You also said you would put the entire fake news mafia press corps on your list. Is that correct? Is that what you said?
I don't have that in front of me.
Benny Johnson's podcast, 821-23.
For more on the Kash Patel and Tulsi Gabbard nomination hearings, we're joined now by Chip Gibbons from Washington, D.C., journalist, policy director of Defending Rights and Dissent, where he's advised multiple congressional offices on reforming the Espionage Act, currently working on a book on the history of the FBI for Verso Books. Chip, thanks for joining us. Before we move to Tulsi Gabbard, if you can talk about the Kash Patel talking about going after journalists and also making an enemies list.
Well, Kash Patel is one of Donald Trump's most disturbing picks, and that is saying something. Patel's comments about going after journalists should be very alarming. First of all, because no one should be in a law enforcement or intelligence position who wants to go after journalists. And I think we have to clarify that the FBI is both a law enforcement agency and an intelligence agency. It's been a hybrid agency since Hoover, and Hoover used the intelligence aspects of the FBI to go after King, to go after civil rights protesters. And in spite of this myth of sort of the reformed FBI, ever since then, they've been doing exactly the same thing. While writing my book, I've come up with documents from right before 9/11 that show them spying on World Bank protesters with incredibly intrusive means. So the FBI is a political police force, and we are nominating someone who has shown themselves to be gleeful about using its political policing powers. The journalism comments are extremely disturbing because the FBI has broad powers to go after journalists. Because the unauthorized disclosure of national defense information is governed by the Espionage Act, authority for enforcing leak investigations is in the intelligence division of the FBI, the division with the least restrictions and most surveillance. And I will note that the Heritage Foundation in Project 2025 has called for hiring more FBI counterintelligence agents with the goals of finding journalist sources and imprisoning them. Unfortunately, there has been a bipartisan trend in this country to come after first journalist sources like S. Edward Snowden and Chelsea Manning, and then under the Trump and Biden administrations to go after journalist Julian Assange. When you look at what was in the plea deal that Julian Assange agreed to, that he is a journalist and he worked with a source to publish classified information, and that is a conspiracy under the Espionage Act, Kash Patel has the perfect tool to go after Trump's critics in the media. So Patel's desire to go after journalists and their sources, the fact that both parties have created and cemented the tools to do so, and the fact that the FBI is a political policing bureaucracy makes Patel an extraordinarily dangerous figure. And we should be extremely concerned about what's coming down the pike, while also acknowledging that if we did not have this bipartisan building up of the surveillance state, this bipartisan ratification of the Espionage Act, this bipartisan use of it against whistleblowers like Snowden, with journalists like Assange. Yes.
I want to go to Edward Snowden, meaning I want to turn to the confirmation hearings for Tulsi Gabbard, Trump's pick for the director of national intelligence. She refused to call whistleblower Edward Snowden a traitor repeatedly throughout this hearing. This is a heated exchange with Colorado Senator Democrat Michael Bennett.
Was Edward Snowden a traitor to the United States of America?
Senator, I will also repeat my answer. He broke the law.
You said earlier that you were offended by a question that my colleague from Kansas asked, which I think was his duty as somebody on this committee to fulfill his responsibility to advise and consent. We are not here to be a rubber stamp for the President of the United States. So let me ask you again, do you believe, as the chairman of this committee believes, as the vast majority of members of our intelligence agencies believe, that Edward Snowden was a traitor to the United States of America?
Senator, if confirmed
this
as Director
when the rubber
of National
hits the
Intelligence,
road. This is,
I will
this
work
is not,
with you to make sure that there
is not
a
moment
another Snowden
for social
likely.
Media. It's not a moment to propagate theories, conspiracy theories, or attacks on journalism in the United States. This is when you need to answer the questions of the people whose votes you're asking for to be confirmed as the chief intelligence officer of this nation. As my colleague said, this is not about you. It's about the people that serve the intelligence agencies of the United States. Is Edward Snowden a traitor to the United States of America? That is not a hard question to answer when the stakes are this high.
Senator, as someone who has
your
served
answer,
in
yes
uniform.
Or no, is Edward Snowden a traitor to the United States of America?
As someone who has worn our uniform
questions.
In combat, I understand how critical our national security
apparently
is.
Apparently you don't.
So that's Democratic Colorado Senator Michael Bennett, echoing questions from other Democrats and Republicans. There was a kind of consensus here. And Tulsi Gabbard repeatedly refused to call the whistleblower Edward Snowden a traitor. Chip, we just have 2 minutes. For those who aren't familiar with this case, but also what this means if she were to become the director of national intelligence, or if it's going to be the basis on which she's voted down.
Well, first of all, I want to say that Senator Bennett's performance was worthy of the House Un-American Activities Committee. Edward Snowden is not a traitor. He is a patriotic whistleblower. Treason is the only crime defined in the United States Constitution. It is defined incredibly narrowly. Edward Snowden has never been charged with treason. He has been charged with unauthorized disclosure of national defense information. Edward Snowden worked with journalists who won Pulitzer Prizes to expose the illegal, unconstitutional mass surveillance programs of the National Security Agency, which were targeting U.S. citizens and others. In spite of the claims that these were foreign counterintelligence programs facing outward, Snowden showed conclusively the NSA, working with the FBI, was being used to engage in the bulk collection of Americans' metadata and was abusing other surveillance programs to access Americans' communications and get information about them. One of the results of Snowden's disclosures was the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals found one of the programs he exposed.
We have 30 seconds.
To be illegal and likely unconstitutional. Someone who exposes the violations of Americans' rights are not is not a traitor. It is a betrayal of the oath of office to violate the Fourth and First Amendment rights of Americans.
A man who many consider a hero across the political spectrum, Dan Ellsberg, before he died, said that Edward Snowden is Dan Ellsberg. Chip Gibbons, I want to thank you so much for being with us, journalist, policy director of Defending Rights and Dissent, where he's advised multiple congressional offices on reforming the Espionage Act, currently working on a book on the history of the FBI. That does it for...
Now she is a little queen of space, and the men will not let her be. Mm-hmm, she's a little queen of space, and the men will not let her be. Every time she makes a spread, fat brown coat, she just runs all over me. I'm gonna get me a gambling woman, that's the last thing that I do. Gonna get me a gambling woman, that's the last thing that I do.